mine and yours. And you don't want no pressure, what but a backup and withdrawal. Cause trust me when I tell you, you don't want that you can crawl. And you don't want to see inside of my... Chapter 17. Too early for big sisters, Suyin thought grumpily, eyes half open as she tried to work around the giggling girl at the washing basin. Paddle my canoe, Gia chortled. Oh, the look on Madame Makmu Ling's face. Poetry class. Ugh. Suyin got her face washed, stuck out her tongue behind her sister's back, and headed downstairs. I saw that. So? Suyin smirked, jumping off the last step with a flourish, to land in front of her mother's raised eyebrow. Mom? Oh, now you're gonna get it, Gia said gleefully, gracefully gliding down the stairs like a proper young lady.
Suyin, be polite to your sister,
Mei Xiang said firmly, raised her gaze and eyed Gia.
Gia, stop hogging the washroom in the morning, or you're going to have to start cutting your dates an hour shorter.
But, Mom!
If you can't get out of the way fast enough in the morning, you obviously need more sleep. Or am I wrong?
She shooed them both towards breakfast.
Eat, eat. You don't want to be late.
Tea, Suyin thought gratefully, gulping it down before she attacked her morning rice. She chewed her way through half of it, trying to ignore the sullen steaming beside her. Gia deserved it. She'd been out late a lot. But some of those times she was out late when she would have been early, or she was helping me with Jinhai. Suyin braced herself and glanced at her sister. So, something neat happened at poetry? I am so gonna regret this. Something esoteric about stars and spring mists off somebody else in the linked verse competition, and I'm going to be so bored. You'll never believe it, Gia perked up, smiling. A water tribe boy crashed the class, she giggled. And I mean crashed. He fell in wearing half the window. Suyin's jaw dropped. Really? Okay, for once, making nice with her sister wasn't so bad. Gia launched into salacious details, including way too many about what water tribe tunics didn't cover, and it was almost enough to make Suyin forget they were being watched, and why. Something that eats waterbenders. Suyin tried not to shudder. At least her little brother was actually safe. But Lee's not. For once, she hoped the Dai Li won, no matter what it took. There came a point in time, Smeller Bee realized, shivering, when you were just too scared to scream. Even if there hadn't been a rock wrapped around her mouth as a gag. The Dai Li were so quiet. A few carried crystals that glowed soft green, just enough light to ease their passage through endless tunnels. Only an ingrained habit of defiance kept Smellerbee struggling against her bonds. Even if she broke free, even if she by some miracle got Longshot and Jet loose too, where would they go? Yell at us, hit us, look at us, do something! The Dai Li weren't even touching them, just moving at a fast walk. The three bound freedom fighters carried on a rolling wave of stone. I feel so dumb, Smellerby squirmed, useless or not. That guard warned us. Amaya and Mushi, they told us Jet was asking for trouble. We were trying to talk him out of it. If it weren't for that thing. She thought they'd gotten away from it in the alley. And two of them had, but Jet? Part of Jet just wasn't home anymore. He kept seeing shadows where there weren't any, listening for a voice neither of them could hear. And at night? At night he kept trying to get to water. After she and Longshot had dragged him out of a well, she decided this was a bad idea. That all of Ba Sing Se was a bad idea. And she'd rather take her chances with the whole Fire Nation army camped outside the walls than stick around here anymore. She told Longshot that. He nodded once, eyes sober, and they tried to get Jet and themselves to the outer wall and out. They hadn't made it. Now a pair of Dai Li parted stone like a curtain, and they were lifted into an ordinary room carved into rock, with real lanterns burning on a table by a pitcher of water. One of the Dai Li did glance at them then, just for a moment, barely interested, like they were a particularly stubborn boulder that hadn't yet split. Turned away and disappeared up stone stairs. "Look at us! We're right here! We're right here!" Who knew how long later, footsteps came back down, and not alone.
"Was it wise to send him away?" the Dai Li said neutrally. "The sun is still up," Amaya observed, stepping into the light to regard them with sorrow and grim determination. "He'll be safe enough with his uncle to look after him, and he may have done some hard things in the past, but this, even to protect those he loves, I would rather not ask this of him."
Which was when Smellerby stopped being scared and started being terrified. "Never tick off a healer," her older brother had told her once, back when she'd still had an older brother. "They know how to mess you up."
"You usually don't need my help to question prisoners, Agent Yunsu," Amaya went on, still with that same chilling sorrow. "Time is critical," the sleepy-eyed Dai Li said plainly. "And the one most affected," he nodded ever so slightly at Jet, "isn't behaving rationally." "So you want me to heal him enough to talk?" She sighed, looking over them all, and inclined her head. "I am sorry, but what they're after will kill those I care for if it is not stopped."
"No, no," Smellerby thought, frozen. "Get away!"
"The water spirit almost took Lee's mind and spirit," Amaya went on quietly, advancing on Jet. "It will try again, and I will not let that happen, no matter what it takes."
"The Fire Nation took our homes. The Fire Nation took our families." Jet had said that, raid after deadly raid. "We have to fight them wherever they are, whoever they are, no matter what it takes." Facing it from the other side, Smellerby was very, very sorry.
"Nothing," Yunsu frowned. "Nothing," Amaya arched a brow, still queasy, though she'd be damned if she'd let this man know it. Shirong, she might have. A faint light of compassion, of regret, still burned in the man, like stars seen through mist. She couldn't fault Zuko for being drawn to him. Like called to like, and she knew what wounds Shirong had suffered. Yunsu, the light was gone, if it had ever existed.
"Nothing we didn't know."
Yunsu let his gaze linger on the regagged children. "We'll take them now."
"Why not just let them go?" Amaya said levelly,
glancing at the terrified girl out of the corner of her eye. "They were trying to get out of the city. Surely that would be best for everyone."
Faint hope lit Smellerby's eyes. Longshot held himself still.
"And what if it decides to follow a victim that got away?"
Yunsu said dispassionately. "A waterbender is a more attractive target, but we can't take the chance."
"Then you could hold them just until the spirit is dealt with," Amaya suggested. Yunsu looked at her and silently looked away. "You can't save everyone," Amaya told herself, heartsick. "People are dying."
"I think I could use some air." Somehow, she wasn't surprised that Yunsu followed her out to the garden. He didn't trust her, hadn't for years. She was too valuable to drag under Lake Laogai without proof, but Yunsu was sure she was up to something. Which, of course, she was.
"I wish I were up to a bit more," Amaya thought, sitting by her pond to watch flashes of gold, crimson, and blue molly guppies flickering through the light cast by one of Zuko's lanterns. Thoughtful, careful young man, He'd hedged iron and glass in with stones to be sure none would tip over, and refilled all the oil reserves before he left. The pond rippled as if blown by the wind, a thin sheet of water lapping over the edge, upwards. Lantern light hissed out. Have to get back, have to get away. Amaya. Blue robes trimmed with white fur. Her mother held out a damp hand, and there was something wrong about that. But she'd been so lonely so long, and she'd done so many awful things to try and save those she could from the war. I forgive you, whispered a voice of waves and water weeds. Yunsu never had a chance to scream. Shirong stared at a Fire Nation wanted poster and didn't know whether to laugh or cry. Polhai Stronghold, indeed. The army always kept the best intelligence for themselves, but a fair amount did eventually end up where a Daili could get to it. You had to know what rumors you might need to squash, after all, and which groups of refugees would be the most trouble. As for the intelligence available on the Stronghold and Taku, given the last herbalist hanging on up there had a habit of talking to her cat, anyone might be forgiven for thinking her tale of advising the Avatar to look for frozen frogs was, well... But when you put them together with reports of localized whirlwinds, Yuyan mobilization under a recently promoted Admiral Zhao, and the absolute chaos that had apparently broken out in the Stronghold that night, plus the wanted poster, one simply could not ignore the wanted poster. Fierce-tusked, blue theater mask and all. Spirits! No wonder Lee's paranoid. That's no small string of cash on his head. But put together, the reports explained much more. That crushing sorrow and guilt, like a blanket of stones. The fierce determination to learn healing from Amaya first, when Lee was a fighter through and through. He freed the Avatar. And how did the boy repay him? By slaughtering untold thousands of his countrymen. Exact numbers were hard to come by, but reliable accounts placed the invasion fleet at hundreds of ships, many of classes that would carry 100, even 1,000 men. Wrapping his mind around the potential casualty count alone made Shirong shiver. Even if Lee had abandoned the Fire Nation, the boy had a heart fierce as any waterbender's. Every death must have cut like a knife. And he's probably convinced himself it's all his fault, Shirong thought bleakly. No wonder he doesn't want to trust anyone. After all, legend said the Avatar was the defender of the world. If you couldn't trust him to do the right thing, who could you trust? Except the Avatar doesn't defend your world, not if you're Fire Nation. Or so one Fire Nation petitioner had claimed centuries ago, crying for justice against Kyoshi before the Earth King himself. What was her name? Tama? Timun? Something odd. He'd tracked down as much as he could of the original record. Hungry to know if there was actually a reason behind a century of war against his people. Temul, that was her name, a firebender. A very odd firebender, from what he could cudgel out of memory, who'd sworn the Avatar had wronged her people, bitterly, and that all the world would suffer for it. The darkest day in Fire Nation history. I wish I knew what happened. Professor Tingcha Wen would know, probably. But speak face to face with a man he might one day have to disappear? No. Not if Shirong could avoid it. Besides, I already know what I need to. The Avatar isn't always fair. Timul didn't even get a hearing. And that was Kyoshi, a grown woman who knew that justice required consideration, as well as decisiveness, and that nothing in life was either fully good or evil. This Avatar is 12 years old,
and the people he trusts are barely older. Shirong shook his head.
I don't like it. I want him out of my city.
The agent sat up straight in his chair, the ramifications of that thought sinking in. The generals surely had a plan for the Avatar's power. Long Feng must have a plan, or he wouldn't order the Bison confined. But if the Avatar had his Bison, he wouldn't have to be here. They could still plan. He could visit. Why keep the animal from him? Shirong couldn't think of any good reason, but he could think of a reason. A horrible one. Back the Avatar into a corner. Trap him so you can aim that power at your enemies. Like he was trapped at the North Pole.
No!
Hands clenched on paper, crinkling it. Shirong made himself let go. Glad he never used his rock gloves to read. He could imagine the walls of this archive studded with stone from that sudden, soul-deep fury. I am Dai Li. I've done horrible things to protect my city. I'll probably do a lot more, but this? I am Dai Li, of the order formed to protect Ba Sing Se from its own spirits, by Avatar Kyoshi herself. And this horrible thing, I will not do. Shirong had to take a moment just to breathe, shaken. He'd be out of step with his comrades. He'd be potentially disobeying Long Feng. I don't know what effect that horror at the North Pole had on the spirits, and I don't want to find out here. Ba Sing Se doesn't deserve that. My people don't deserve that. Li sure as hell doesn't deserve that. And a 12-year-old boy who happened to be the Avatar didn't deserve it either. Shirong had read reports on the Ba Sing Se zoo incident. For all his awesome power, the Avatar was a child. An impulsive, happy, optimistic child. It's wrong. If I'm right, what they're planning to do is just wrong. Not to mention lethally short-sighted. Eventually, that boy would grow up and have all the power legend said Kyoshi and Roku had wielded. Did the Earth Kingdom really want someone that powerful knowing they'd been used as a weapon? No. Oma and Shu, no. I have to do something. Do something? Do what? Go against Long Feng's direct orders? Not to mention the purely practical aspect of the number of fellow Dai Li who'd be between him and any attempt to free the Bison? He was a reasonably skilled earthbender and agent. He was not the blind bandit. I need help. Almost against his will, Shirong glanced at the poster again. There's a big difference between a fortress on a cliff and a labyrinth underground. Still, Pohai's stronghold. Who in the army had ever broken in there? He's fast, smart, and sneaky. He may have less than a month training his waterbending, but those moves he does know he has cold. And he has years of training in firebending forms. Most important of all, no one would see it coming. Valid points, Shirong thought. But will he do it? He has no reason to love the Avatar. But Li did love his uncle, and cared about Amaya, not to mention the numerous other people he'd apparently gotten mixed up with. The young man cared. And he's practical, even if he hates the Avatar. And I couldn't blame him if he did. He'll do what he believes is right. Still, if Li agreed, and that was an if, he'd need an earthbender's help to get in. Running feet. Shirong had just enough time to stuff the poster out of sight before Quan hit the doorframe hard enough to shiver rocks. Our agents at the clinic missed their check-in, Quan said grimly. Amaya.
Perhaps we should just go home, nephew, Iroh suggested, as they climbed the steps to Amaya's clinic. If she believed it was better for you not to be here.
She was going to do something she didn't want to do, Uncle. Zuko's face was grim. I've seen that before. And what that might be, Iroh feared to know, especially if the Dai Li were involved.
Even so, he said gravely, she may not be pleased if we interfere.
I'm not planning to interfere, Zuko admitted quietly. If she feels she has to, I know what that's like. He glanced at his uncle. But I thought, if it's over, we could be there, if she needs somebody.
Iroh raised gray brows and nodded. That is very thoughtful, nephew. But let us be polite as well. If she tells us she wishes us to go, we will...
He cut himself off as Zuko held up a warning hand. What do you hear? Zuko asked, half a whisper.
Focused, Iroh listened. People in the streets, shopkeepers calling their wares before closing for the night, the outraged squawks of an ostrich horse a street away.
From the clinic? Nothing.
The pair traded glances, and his nephew went through the door fast and hard.
Silence.
Iroh shut the door quietly behind them, lit a flame in his palm for more light. Only one lamp lit, he observed, as they passed through the entryway to the main clinic. It could not have happened too long after dark. The smell reached them, and Iroh saw his nephew pale. Seaweed and blood. Call a fire. Uncle, we will make explanations later, Iroh said darkly. If there is anyone still alive to explain to.
There wasn't.
One agent lay lifeless in a cold red pool just inside the screen to Amaya's garden, throat ravaged as if by the Unagi's teeth. Another had fallen face first into the pool, drowned and gone when they turned him over. A third was all but entombed in ice against the wall where he tried to flee, hands raised before his face in futile defense. Not futile, Iroh realized as they came closer, and Zuko swore under his breath. He kept an airspace open, quickly. Fire in their hands, breathing steam, they cracked the agent free. He fell as dead weight into their arms, pale as ice. But Iroh had studied waterbenders and taught his nephew well. A cold body might seem dead. Here by the Dai Li's mouth, Iroh felt the faintest whisper of breath. Bring him inside. Build up the fire. Hot rocks wrapped in blankets around the man. They propped him by the stove and kept working. Heating water on top of the stove, Zuko wreathed his hands in flame and worked over icy skin. Iroh timed faint breaths and blew out gentle steam so the agent could breathe in warmth as well.
Bon, Zuko kept saying as he worked. Bon, it's Li. You're at the clinic. We found you. You're going to be all right. Just hang on.
Finally, the agent began to shiver. Iroh glanced at his nephew, who nodded and released the fire back to the stove, wrapping his hands in hot water instead.
Agent Bon? Iroh asked. Can you hear us?
Father? Bon whispered, teeth chattering.
No, can't be. You're dead.
Bon, Zuko said sharply. It's gone. I can't feel it anywhere. It's gone and people are dead and Amaya, wake up! Bon's eyes snapped open.
Lee?
Iroh arched an eyebrow, intrigued. Earthbenders didn't usually respond to a firebender's force of will.
We have not found healer Amaya.
It took her through the water.
As he'd feared.
Stay with him while I get help, Iroh directed, rising.
Not staying here, Bon gasped, trying to sit up before Zuko shoved him back down.
It killed Dai Li. Can't let it get away.
Stay down.
An order that crackled in the air as Zuko glared the agent into going limp. You did your duty. You told us what we're up against. Now stay put so Uncle can get help to keep you alive while we go kill this thing.
Kill it? Bon managed through shivers. But you're a waterbender.
I am,
Zuko's gaze went to the lanterns. Which is why it's never going to see this coming. One remains who would challenge us. Curled in endless cold, Amaya tried not to think. But the water and power and the hunger were all, and she couldn't help but see green eyes under black hair, green that burned to gold. That one, hunger and a chill contempt. Thief, disruptor, prey. Yes, we know him. Thief? Zuko would never. And she was breathing in storm. She was the storm. Fixed on the fires of mortal lives on the frail mortal vessel. Born of fire, born enemies. Too dangerous to approach in calmer seas. Too dangerous to lure, almost always. Which would make their despair all the sweeter. She felt the lightning building strike. No! Fire and flesh had seized the lightning, parried it, away and into the waves. Life dangling so temptingly from twisted metal was grabbed by other lives, hauled away from danger. Unfair, unfair, it hungered. They could not deny it. But the storm was still strong, the metal hull damaged. The fire lives would fall, they would. Curses breathed around the mortals, two above all, and Agni had no power here, and no other spirit would deny its feasting. The mortals' own hate and obsession would make them prey. Let him go! We need to get this ship to safety! Impossible. That blood could not ignore its curse. It existed. That alone disrupted what should be. It could not deny destiny. It would fall and be destroyed. Yet the mortals gained the sunlight at the heart of the storm, and it was powerless. You cannot rob me of my prey. But they had, for a time, as another bright fire had years ago and far away. Gold and green and violet burning between water and delectable flesh. It could taste the sand of that warm water shore even now. But that fire life was well defended, and these more recent thieves had headed north into waters too chill for comfort, and the hunger would not be sated by anything as petty as waiting. Death and disruption called, and here the feeding had been good. There was still need for caution, of course. The bridge was near, and it was always wise to avoid such great power, no matter how young. The bridge might not understand what belonged to it by right, and anything it could take belonged to it. As you do, a susurrus of waves. He is the last, and he is coming to us. Twice he escaped. Fireborn, enemy, thief, once by fire, once by sun. The sun will not scorch again for hours, and as for fire, water crushed her, and she had no strength to weep. Think, Zuko told himself. Don't jump in, don't panic, think. He tugged the reins of his hastily borrowed ostrich horse to aim for a distant stretch of sandy lakeshore between water and towering cliffs. Uncle was matching him pace for pace, still titching about their mount's hapless owner, who had not fully appreciated the seriousness of their request. The nerve jabs would wear off, eventually. The plan is clear, Iroh called to him. Yes, I hope. Just tell me why this monster isn't going to do the smart thing and hide on the bottom of the lake and laugh at us. 3 reasons. The general sounded grimly cheerful. First, if it did that, we would have no chance to rescue Amaya, and that would simply not be fair. This isn't a spirit tale, Uncle. The hero doesn't always win, as if we were ever heroes. Is it not? Better reason. Young people. Second, this is a Kamui, not one of the great spirits. It is surely hungry and cunning,
but I would imagine it is not too bright.
Okay, he could work with that. Though dumb opponents could be some of the most dangerous. You never knew what the idiots would do. And third?
Well, I am certain that is more than enough. Uncle!
Zuko cast him a brief glare. We're risking our lives. We might be risking the whole city. I need to know.
Iroh gave him a look in askance. Nephew, I have great confidence in your ability to irritate anything.
Okay, maybe he didn't need to know. Oh, hell, it's a talent. Use it.
Which was what their plan meant to do.
His mount shied as Earth erupted.
Stop right there, an unfamiliar voice ordered.
Dai Li, wonderful.
Zuko halted his mount, searching under night-shadowed hats for any hint of a familiar face.
Agent Shurong, Amaya's in the lake.
You're sure of that, are you?
Shurong's stance was subtle, outwardly relaxed and unmistakable.
He thinks it got me. Again.
Damn it, we don't have time.
We are not, Iroh stated, voice carrying through the night. Agent Bond said it took her, and her body was not at the clinic. We hope she is here, and that it has not yet fed.
Bond? The agent apparently in charge echoed darkly. Probably feels like he went for a swim at the North Pole, but he was lucid. Zuko bit out, staring at calm, dark waters. We left him with the guard.
Oh no.
Down! A push froze the leading edge of the wave as it roared overhead, held back the bulk of the water long enough for everyone to bolt clear. But even that light touch of bending swamped him, cold and hunger and death pulling him under.
No! I am Prince Zuko, son of Ursa and Fire Lord Ozai. I faced fire and betrayal and the Avatar himself. Exile didn't kill me. The North Pole didn't kill me. Azula didn't kill me. One of us is going to die here, and it's not going to be me.
Night snapped back into focus, and Zuko bared his teeth at the towering wet shadows, pulled up a ball of water between his hands, flattening it between circling palms until it streamed with glints of green and gold, swirled it into a globe again, and lashed out. He lost the sphere as soon as it hit the shadow water with a wrench like someone tearing away a fingernail. But that was fine. Better than fine. Because fire-laced water made it scream. And in the brief moment, shadows cleared at the impact. Amaya. Suspended in water. Limp, eyes open and aglow like nothing the Dai Li had ever seen before. He could tell that from the gasps, the scrambling huddle of fear behind him. But I've seen it before and I don't care. Zuko smirked and knew Shurong thought he was crazy. Was that supposed to scare me? He taunted surging black water. You'll have to do better than that. Shadow water roared, swirling into a scaled dragon horse whose head lunged for him, fangs leading. A duck, a roll, and he laughed in its face. Too slow. Let's see just how mad I can get you.
He's insane, Shurong said numbly, standing by Quan in terrified shock. The other two Dai Li had raised a low wall to break oncoming waves and stood ready to bend it higher, if that would do any good. He'd read about Haima Jiao, certainly. They all had. But the reality?
We've found it. Now what the hell do we do with it?
No. Only focused. Mushi seized both of them by the shoulders, just long enough for a determined shake. He is buying time. Think. It draws strength from water and from Amaya. How can we best weaken it?
How can Li even keep standing? Shurong shot back. It's pulling from the whole lake.
Li is not drawing his water from the lake.
Mushi said firmly. Look. Mist, was Shurong's first thought, followed hard by, why is mist just there, near Lee's feet? Sweeping feet, shifting from stance to quick stance as Lee led the monster on a mad chase across the beach. Feet that circled and whirled as Lee spun himself back upright after a lash of water knocked him down by sheer force of displaced air. Firebending, Shurong realized. Those are firebending stances, the kind they use to gather energy to strike. But Lee was pulling up water out of the shore itself. Water from the shore is water of the shore, Shurong knew, heart racing. Not the lake, not the land. And shores were boundaries, in between places, like the moments of dawn and dusk. Places spirits roamed freely, and yet, at the same time, places a human could fight a spirit, even one with the strength of a murdering sea. Fight, yes, Shurong knew, still shivering. Win? Mist spun into another small globe, glowing, flung. An inhuman scream, and the Haima Jiao lunged once more. As long as he is not bending the same water, it cannot seize him, Mushi said fiercely. You are earthbenders. Cut away its strength. Quan gave the gray-haired teamaker a narrow look, then nodded, flinging a subtle gesture at Shurong before gathering the other two and arcing a long wall into the lake. Gee, thanks, Shurong thought dryly, grabbing Mushi right back. You couldn't know we'd be here. You must have had another plan. Ah, yes. Reaching around, Mushi took a roll of pine dark cloth and a capped skin off his shoulder. A full skin that sloshed and didn't smell anything like water. Remind me never, ever to get you mad at me, Shurong said faintly. Mushi's smile was wry and bittersweet. Do you know spirit mazes? Shurong nodded. That and every other nasty spirit trick he could hunt down in the archives, plus anything he could persuade out of people from beyond the wall. Then let us give this creature a night it will never forget. Let me die. She didn't want to look. She didn't want to see. She didn't want to feel the cold, cruel pleasure of hunting Zuko across the shore with waves and water whips and fangs. Amaya! No, she didn't want to hear her student plead. She didn't... Amaya, damn it, wake up! It's lying to you! That didn't sound like pleading. It feels like it's angry, but it's not. Not like you and me. It's just empty. A hole in the water. It eats and eats, but can never fill that hole up. That's why it hates us. It makes you feel angry. That's how it uses you. It makes you alone and scared and lost. Makes you feel like you can't get angry. Like that's giving it what it wants. A flicker of vision as the strength of the lake seemed to shrink. Zuko dodged a spray of ice daggers, vanishing in a cloak of steam. Fire and water confounded the sense of fire and flesh, made her tormentor slow like the lull in the storm. It's lying! Zuko's voice was low and dangerous, as he stalked out of the fog, glaring defiance into dripping fangs. You think your tribe faces off things like this by community? By water? That's what the other waterbenders thought. That's why they died! No, get back, get away! Helplessness washed over her, and she felt a contented snarl. Thin mist blocked some of the next wave, but not all. Water yanked Zuko from his feet. Fangs tore shredded brown cloth as Zuko kicked free of his overrobe and rolled to his feet, dagger in hand. You beat it because when you care about your family, you feel, Zuko panted. And feeling is fire. Amaya, get angry. What? You are alone, outcast from your tribe, condemned by your own hands. Who would take back one who has served their enemies? You are mine! But she'd never done it to serve anyone. She'd done it because... Huojin. Just a little boy lost and crying on the streets. An innocent young troublemaking scamp like Jinhai was now, who'd done nothing to deserve the death hunting him. I did it because I had to. Because he needed me. He needed someone, and I was there. And how could I call myself a healer if I let a child die when I could do something? Loneliness pounded her like a tsunami, driving her down. No. No, I won't let you. I have a family. It is not my tribe. It's small and hidden and broken, but it doesn't give up. Not now. Not ever. You should have settled for me, Haima Zhao. That's my student you're trying to kill, and you can't have him. A hiss of waves, a torrent of images, all the pain and aggravation and fear for the rest of her hidden folk Zuko had brought home to roost. Hate him. Hate and destroy. And it was all true. And all lies. No, Amaya thought, and felt shattered boundaries of herself draw together, hardened by growing anger. You hate us because you envy us, because we are warm and breathing and alive in a way you can never be. I could never hate Zuko. I am angry with him for doing something so stupid and wonderful and brave. And he'd done it for her. She knew that, clear as she could suddenly see the beach. The Dai Li raising walls to cut the strength of water. Mushi's intent discussion with Shirong as they moved sand in subtle patterns. Surely they had a safer plan. Surely they could have waited. But Zuko had put himself on the line here and now to get her angry. Give up, bastard, Amaya thought, focusing all her will on one hand. If she could win that back, even a twitch of her fingers... You are going to die. Foolish little life. None here are strong enough to defeat me. Water surged and stone shattered. No time to think. No time to ask if Mushi had a plan B. Only a moment to stomp and thrust. Shirong felt something more solid than water hit his raised wall. Li surfaced through the grasping waves, gasping for air. Flinging his gloves, Shirong grabbed and yanked.
Oh, you won, Li managed, dripping on sand as rock flew back to Shirong's hands.
We'll settle up later, Shirong said plainly. Don't drip on the lines.
More trenches in the beach than lines, but still. Li's smirk would have looked right at home on a Dilolion.
Uncle?
A few moments more, the old man stated, digging and pouring. Fortunately, it is distracted by breaking the walls. Ice slashed like razors, and Shirong knew it hadn't been distracted enough.
Oh, red. So red. Why was everything red when the world was so cold? That's going to hurt.
For some, war slows the world. Iroh felt his pulse stretch into slow beats as Zuko spunned their falling ally and renewed walls of stone, ground glacier slow out of the lake. He was closer to the shore than his nephew and Shirong, closer to danger, which was precisely where he wanted to be. Wait. Fangs lunged for him, slow as thread unraveling. Wait. A scaled foot of water drifted down, crossing sandy trenches. Now! A breath and flames roared up from the poured lamp oil, will pushing them even higher, just high enough to conceal the sphere of fire Iroh breathed and shaped around himself, stepping through the stunned water until one hand touched chilled, struggling flesh. He snapped open the firethorn robe, wrapping it around Amaya in one soft swirl, breathed and stepped out of the water, out of the maze, fire still blazing behind them.
Old smoke, indeed. Lost! Flesh gone, waterbender gone, lake's strength being sliced away by stone. It writhed in the maze of flames, bewildered. Pray did not do this. Pray, one still touching the water, touching its power. Blood and fear and alone sinking through its defenses. Mine. Zuko. Fire around his hands. Agni, let Uncle be distracting the others. There was no way he could explain this. He was too tired to use water, and he couldn't let Shurong die. Zuko. His mother's voice, warm and sweet as sugar smoke. Come home. No, you're not real. Yet he couldn't stop himself from rising and walking toward her. No, damn it, you know it's lying. Shurong is bleeding. You have to... But it wasn't just his mother. It was her and Azula. And his sister was smiling, glad to see him. And he wanted it so much. He would have given his heart if it had been real. Fire is passion. Love and rage and fire slammed home. Steel sinking into the hilt. Never give up without a fight. You got him, Shurong whispered. As the black jelly of a dying sea kamui slid off white-hot steel. Good job. We all did a good job, the agent knew, feeling the cold creep back in. He should care about that, but he was so tired. Not a bad way to go. My city is safe. My people weren't safe. Not yet. He hadn't told Lee. He had to tell Lee. Shurong. An exhausted sob. Lee's hands grabbed to his, hot as embers. Do you trust me? Silly question to ask a dying man, but he tried to nod. Don't give up. Just don't give up. Darkness and light and something burning inside. He couldn't bear it. He'd be nothing more than ash and smoke on the wind. Don't give up. Like breaking through a crust of lava and still somehow breathing, the fire was everywhere, burning, easing like banked coals, warming winter-chilled skin. Shurong took a soggy breath, coughed, and kept breathing. Huh, didn't see that coming. Daring, he opened his eyes. You look like hell. Thanks, Lee muttered, ghost pale and shaking. Sorry about the reports. Reports? Shurong echoed, confused, but just for a moment. That's right, I'm alive, which means I have to write up what happened. Damn. Are you trying to kill my will to live? Lee smirked at him, turned a little, creaky as an old man, to look Quan in the eye. Anybody else hurt? Please tell me there's not. Bumps and bruises. We'll keep. Quan crouched beside Shurong, face almost blank with amazement, as he took in the healing scars raking the agent's chest. Damn, I was sure you were... He whistled. Healer Amaya's a good teacher. Yes, she... Master Amaya! Lee tried to jump to his feet. Staggered. Would have fallen if Quan hadn't caught him. Uncle? Uncle? Eyeing the tea maker, whispering sweet nothings in the drenched healer's ear, and her desperate clutch on his robe, Shurong raised an eyebrow. That's just not fair, Lee managed. Indeed, Shurong stated wryly. The hero's supposed to get the girl. You know, the handsome prince or the injured, bleeding common bender who saved the day in the nick of time. It's a fundamental law of the universe. Mushi lifted his head enough to smile at them, mysterious as a cat owl. And what makes you think the hero did not? Lee clapped a hand to his forehead. Shurong snickered. And couldn't stop. Oh, Oma and Shu, don't make me laugh. It hurts. But it was a good hurt. Pain meant he was alive. We're alive, and it's dead. And I'll be able to tell Lee about the bison. Soon.